Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link. Joining us today at the round table of dim lighting is improv comedian, YouTube creator, co-creator of one of the most popular YouTube series of all time, Epic Rap Battles of History. That's right, Lloyd Alquist, a.k.a. Epic Lloyd.
We are very excited about this one because, as you might have known, we've been in a couple of these epic rap battles of history ourselves.
Is that like your bragging voice?
This is my humble brag voice. I hate to admit it, but we've been in three epic rap battles of history. Now, the thing, we love these guys, both Pete and Lloyd. You know, we talked to Pete on last season of Ear Biscuits, and now we get to talk to the other half, to Lloyd. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We love these guys because, for, you know, they're great guys. Nice Peter really is nice, and Lloyd is really epic. He's also very nice.
Nice, yeah, he's nice.
He's
too.
He's epically nice. But
what if he was called Epic Nice Lloyd? Like
that would be
like
weird.
He was trying to one up Nice.
Very
Peter.
Weird.
And that wouldn't be very nice, would it?
But one of the reasons we love these guys is because I love to get involved in something that I know is going to be great.
Yeah.
You know, we spend all this time trying to get our videos the way we want them to be, and then we're still not satisfied 90% of the time. But so many times when you kind of get involved in somebody else's project, you're kind of like, well, I kind of think you should do it like this, but I'm not going to speak up. I'm not going to say anything. These guys knock it out of the park every single time. Like Link said, one of the most successful, probably the most successful series. I mean, in terms of a series of this type, definitely the most successful musical series ever on the YouTubes.
Yeah, and of course, we were recently featured as Lewis and Clark in one of the latest rap battles.
Did you hear that, Merriweather? I think
Epic
they mean
Lloyd.
A brawl.
So here's a clip of that. Crippled, we spit like Billy the Kid with his guns, and you'll be verbally kicked in the nutsack of your wheel puns. A teen mom carried you and your truth. You should have let the baby lean, put you in the papoose. And if those native dudes knew what white dudes were gonna do, they would have stopped you in Dakota. They should totally sue. Why don't you go back to exploring Napoleon's old swamp? Or you'll discover your corpse most triumphantly stung. So we had a great conversation with Lloyd. He's already a good friend of ours whenever we get to hang out, guesting on a spot like that.
Right. So you're going to get to hear the Lloyd half of the story of how this all came together with Epic Rap Battles of History and just Lloyd's background in general. A lot of people don't know that he didn't just start with improv comedy, but he's continued with that and actually has a hand in an improv comedy theater here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and I really enjoy picking his brain about improv comedy. He said he wants to write a book about it. That's how passionate he is about it.
He has like a formula.
Yeah, he has a formula. So that amongst the whole backstory of Epic Rap Battles and the organic, yes, I use the term, way that kind of came about.
Right.
It's very fascinating. So stick around for that. You will enjoy it.
We want to let you guys know, if you didn't already, we just released an album called Song Biscuits Volume 1, released it on iTunes last week. As you know, if you watch the Good Mythical Morning channel for the past few months, on Saturday, we have been doing a Song Biscuit, an original mm-hmm. song based on your suggestions, oftentimes a collaboration with another YouTuber. And these songs were conceptualized and then written and performed all in about an hour or so. But you know what? It turned out to be a great set of 15 different songs that you can go buy individually on iTunes, or you can get the entire album for
$8.99.
And I think it is also available through Amazon if you are not an iTunes person.
Yeah, so support our mythical endeavors by downloading that album and spend more time with us in your ears, in between these ear biscuits. And we may or may not be animating a few of those. I'm not gonna say.
Well, I'm gonna
say. But you might have just got the scoop on ear biscuits.
We are gonna be doing that.
We also wanna mention our sponsor, EF College Break. You know, we've talked about them a few times. The travel experts at EF College Break make travel easy, affordable, and even more fun for anyone ages 18 to 28. College not required.
Now, here's the thing. When you make the decision to travel and to plan it all yourself, you may end up like the guy who recently wanted to plan a trip to Granada, but he actually planned a trip to Granada. Yeah, they sound the same, but one is in Spain and one is in the Caribbean, and he wanted to go to the one in Spain.
Well, okay, I thought you were going to say one is in the Caribbean and one is in a prison.
Well, so I mean, it could have been worse. Right. But you know what he did? He sued the airline.
He sued the airline after accidentally going to the Caribbean?
If you don't remember that, the one with the E is in Spain and the one, or I don't know, the one without the E, see, I don't know. I could go to either one right now. I would be happy. But
or
the point
just go
is,
to EFCollegeBreak.com.
The point is that, why try to do this? I'm planning, I'm not 18 to 28. I'm older than that. But I'm just trying to plan a little anniversary trip with my wife to Santa Barbara, and I can't figure out what to do there. If I could have
somebody... How are you going to go overseas? You're not.
Right. You want to try to make a real trip happen across a continent? You need help with that, brothers and sisters?
Yeah. They have the options. They have the expertise. Check out their website. They've built trips across six continents, including a grand tour of Ireland, Costa Rican adventure,
hey,
and a road trip through Europe. And they provide a tour director who's also a local expert, so you don't get egg on your face, unless that's the tour, the egg on your face tour, which
I don't know
is
if
not
they have that.
That is not an option.
And don't worry about signing up by yourself, because you won't be alone. If you sign up, you will get grouped together with other people that you will like and enjoy traveling with. Well, I can't make that promise, but if you're open-minded, maybe. So do it. Head over to our special URL, efcollegebreak.com/rhettandlink, and we will hook you up with $100 off your next adventure.
That's right, $100 off, efcollegebreak.com/rhettandlink. And now on to the biscuit. Thanks for coming to the round table of dim lighting, Lloyd.
Very much my pleasure.
You were late, but that's okay.
I know, I'm very sorry.
Let's start with that.
I'm so sorry, I was
what
late.
What happened, man, traffic?
What's
your LA excuse?
I feel like...
We're so far apart.
You can't, I know, I'm also-
We're having this conversation.
I'm also talking to you as if like people are listening, which they are, but like it always changes, you know?
It does a little bit.
My dad used to have this businessman voice on the phone. He'd be like, this is Bruce Alquist. It was like nothing like his real voice.
What did he do?
He would be like, Bruce Alquist. And he would talk like
was he an Elvis
impersonator, so
he's a Bruce Elvis.
Little Bruce Elvis. I was late because we were trying to do something else. Yeah, he's a handyman, carpenter, plumber, or whatever you want to do.
My dad does some of that stuff too.
I always say my wife has a very like super sweet phone voice. And then she'll like turn to me and it's like a totally different
Where's
talk.
That phone voice?
It's gone.
Yeah, talk
I was on the phone. Why were you talking to
talk
me?
Talk to me in that sweet phone voice.
I definitely change the tone of my voice when I'm like assuming a certain status, you know? Like if you have to sound like you're in charge or if you're like having to sound like you're, charismatic or whatever.
But right now you sound like the friend Lloyd, and that's what we want.
Okay, well, don't bring out the enemy Lloyd, because I am in trouble.
Yeah. Did you ever have one of those friends who started talking lower, but you could tell he was trying to talk lower?
Like in puberty years?
Yeah, well, like it just happened in like high school. We have a couple of friends, no names will be named.
Bill.
Who we went to high school with him, and then I saw him like a couple of years after high school, and he was like talking like this.
Affecting his voice.
Really trying to talk low. Oh,
no, I don't know anybody who's done that. I definitely like, if I'm talking to like I don't know. I talk like more hood if I'm hanging around with like a bunch of like my hood friends or whatever. So
Right.
I definitely go more Southern.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like even when I just said my dad, said dad.
Yeah.
And it was almost that bad.
My dad.
Because that's how he kind of talks. My dad, he doesn't affect his voice when he's talking on the phone like your dad, but he can't get off the phone. That's the thing my dad has is at the end of the phone conversation, when you're just supposed to say bye.
Yeah.
My dad's like,
one more thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He doesn't say English either. He speaks an alien language that is a long goodbye. Like you're me. We're like, okay, Dad, love you. Bye.
Okay, Dad, love you. Thanks a lot for the call.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Thanks. Well. You okay?
Yeah.
I've got to go. I'm on the phone.
I'm not exaggerating.
He's not exaggerating. In fact, he let me listen to it one time. He put it on speaker, and I was like, no, because he had told me this, and I was like, there's no way that he, and then he did just what he just did.
And he doesn't stutter or anything. It's just at the end of a conversation.
That's got to be a Southern thing, though. That's definitely.
I think it's isolated to Link's dad, actually.
Southern father.
Just Southern dad.
I told you this. I want to get into the mechanisms of writing the epic rap battles. Because, I mean, as we tell you every time, we're like super thankful to be involved in these things with you and Pete. It's always amazing. It's amazing to be a guest on something that's like, oh, 10 million views right out of the gate. You know, that's an amazing thing to just know that there's a pressure that's off, actually, I feel like, because there's so much of what we do that you're just like, okay, well, we're working so hard on this. Is it going to be worth it? I mean, do you get that sense at this point with the success of an epic rap battle that it's like you're able to release and say, all right, people love this. There's a baseline view that it's tremendous. Does that take a pressure off or does that add more pressure?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. Like, I feel like it's a constant. It makes the pressure constant, I think, which maybe relieves it in overall, you know, because it's like we don't do that many videos. So we have to put, a lot of time into each one. So we just try to give all of them everything we have. Definitely some do better than others, for sure. I mean, there's like 10 million view disparity. Thank you. Thank you. I just turned into your dad there for a second. A difference. So it definitely there's disparity in some of them, but I don't think about, is this one going to be good or is that one going to be good? I think more about the characters, or if we have guests like you guys, and thank you for those nice things you said. It's always, I mean, working with you guys has been so cool. When we first started the battles, we were like, oh, let's put together like an ensemble cast and we'll just keep using the same people over and over again. And we like thought about casting and doing an audition and stuff, but it's kind of become this very organic kind of ensemble cast that we work with. So it's really nice. So I just try to focus on, if there are special guests like you guys, I try to focus on making you guys the best song that we possibly can. And that takes the pressure off of like the world stuff. It's like just localizes it a little bit. And then,
there's your own self-imposed standard. Yeah. I really get a sense that you have this internal standard. And I've just gotten the impression it's more about that. Like, I know you guys work so hard on crafting each of these things.
Yeah, we definitely push each other and we definitely, no, we only make 12 battles a year. So like we have to do it really, really well.
So just start to walk us through the process. Like when we were there recording the vocals, like we were hanging out before we went in to do the Lewis and Clark vocals, and Rhett and I were just kind of eyeing the whiteboard and trying to decipher the process because it was, okay, obviously there's like this collaborative place where somebody's writing on a whiteboard and there's like different lines that are up there. Like they're comedic concepts. How does a song?
We do a ton of research. First, we decide on the matchup. Obviously,
and is that always a suggestion?
Always a suggestion, but it's kind of easy now because there's so many suggestions that usually there's something in our brain and we just can go and find
search.
It.
Search for it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a very nice thing, but it's always from the audience. But there's certainly a lot to choose from. So we first decide on that, then we decide usually on a beat. The beat will influence the style of writing. We try to find a beat that feels right for the.
But let's talk Lewis and Clark then. Yeah. Like picking that beat. Well, first of all, you picked Lewis and Clark versus Bill and Ted. Let's just walk through this one since we're so fond of it.
You know? Cool.
Like how did you pick it?
The beat?
No. Let's Lewis and concept.
Clark. Oh, we picked it because.
Are you in a room? You and Pete, are you on the phone? Are there there's other people at this point?
Well, we'll go to the studio. That's where we usually work, you know, and we hang out there. And, you know, as we approach, when we map out like the production time or months or whatever, we have a couple of weeks in there that we decide on matchups, decide on beats and stuff like that. And so during that time, we just kind of brainstorm. And there's we usually do about six at a time. And there's usually about three that we've been talking about and didn't get to do the previous season or whatever that like kind of fit in. Or one of us will have our favorites that we'll just try to get back into the
when you're making that decision, how much of it is based on people are gonna love this or we're gonna love this? And the reason I ask that is because when you think about Lewis and Clark and Bill and Ted, I mean, first of all, in general, history, you're already dealing with things that maybe a lot of kids out there are not gonna know about to begin with, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then when you're dealing with like a reference like Bill and Ted, you're also kind of talking to people—
America.
Who are Americans, who are 30 years old and up, right?
Yeah.
Technically.
Yeah.
Well, I assume you started with Bill and Ted. You weren't like chomping at the bit to do a Lewis and Clark rap battle?
Well, we knew you guys were gonna play Lewis. We knew Bill and Ted versus Lewis and Clark probably since like the beginning of season 3.
Oh, really?
And it was always going to be you guys from the very beginning. That's a fact.
Really?
So, yeah. So the fact that you guys were playing Lewis and Clark are like, oh, yeah, that's going to be great. So that made that really exciting to
But you chose a rap battle about Bill and Ted and then paired them with conceptually with Lewis and Clark as like the first step.
What do you mean?
Like you chose to pit them against each other, the characters.
Yeah, for sure. We chose a matchup first, but that matchup has been around for a long time, is what
right.
I'm saying. So
okay.
The matchup has been around. And so, like, me and Pete knew we could probably do Bill and Ted, and you guys as Lewis and Clark was super easy. It's like a specific— – is it— – we try to do 50-50. We try to, like, stay true to ourselves and see what's going to be funny for us and not try to get too pandery, you know, in terms
right.
of, like, oh, like, we don't do, like, the latest flash in the pan. You know,
yeah.
Usually the rule is if they're going to be— – still remembered in 50 years from now, even if it's just by a specific pocket of people,
okay.
like then we'll do it. Lewis and Clark are obviously, you know,
yeah.
they're going to be there. And Bill and Ted, there's, I mean, Keanu Reeves is still very, you know, popular and that other guy, you know, whoever.
Yeah. Did you see John Wick as part of your reconnaissance?
Who?
That new Keanu movie.
Okay, oh, there's my answer.
No,
I saw it.
I heard it was good.
It was good?
I read it was not good.
As good as it was made out to be.
Mm. Oh,
sorry.
But it was
Keanu.
Better than people expected it to be before they wrote that it was better
yeah,
than you
right,
expected
exactly.
it to be.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So was it better than Jupiter Rising with Channing Tatum?
I haven't seen that.
No, I haven't seen that either.
So
Channing Tatum.
So you finally get around to making this one and like... You know, we're basically just sitting on the doorstep just waiting to come in and like record another one. You didn't even have to ask us.
Dude, we got more.
And I think I told you this, but one of the first books that I remember reading as a kid and crying in my bedroom alone when I was done reading it was a book about Lewis and Clark.
When they finally made it. Why, you cried?
I cried.
I've never cried reading a book.
I mean, grade school kid in my, like, I don't know. It was a long book. It was a part of my life for a long time because I'm a slow reader.
Yeah.
And they finally made it.
You were finally done with the book.
And
after 18 months.
No one told me they had made it, Lloyd. I mean,
No one spoiled the history of the United States. Spoiler alert.
The
they made it.
You were in the suspense the whole time.
But,
why would they have a book about these guys if they didn't make it?
It really connected with me.
And they died.
Well,
it did get sad.
The suicide was not part of the book.
Yeah.
And like
sad.
My grade school
yeah.
level version.
You learned that from Ken Burns.
It was a little sad.
I learned that from the Epic Rap Battle lyrics.
Nice.
No, I
oh,
did
you
learn
knew that from Ken
I learned
Burns.
That from Ken Burns.
I didn't know that until we started doing a research. I didn't know he killed himself until we started reading about it and stuff. So
then you sit down and you start writing this thing.
Yeah, I start. Pete and I obviously have very different, not obviously, we have very different styles of writing and almost everything that we do.
Okay.
So Pete, well, first thing we'll do is just start brainstorming. You know, if in a perfect world, now that we're into the production, like we're sort of our heads all over the place and we're like piecing things together. But like when we come into it relaxed and good, we'll have me and Pete and sometimes Zach and Mike, another writer of ours, and we'll just toss around ideas. What are the things that you would want to know about Bill and Ted? What are the top 10 things you think of right away? What are the middle 10 things? We have this kind of SAT, ACT way of writing things, which is like 3 tiers of jokes. And in ACT or SATs, you have like 3 tiers of questions. One that everybody will get. Mid-level B is like, you know, a couple people will get. And then, I mean, like more average people will get. And then C is like a really niche, only super fans will get. So
now, let me ask you, are you describing it that way to us? Or is that how you talk amongst yourselves when writing too? Like we've got our 3 tiers and are there 3 tiers on a whiteboard or is this just?
We don't get that structured with it. That's just what we have in our brain. And we talk about it that way when we talk about the writing process.
You want to be able to categorize a joke to know that if you've got a whole song full of third tier jokes, or you want an even dispersion of jokes.
Yeah, you want to be able to, if someone's never seen Bill and Ted, you want them to be able to understand from watching it and seeing it that it's funny. But then you also have to have those jokes that the Bill and Ted super uber fans will love.
Yeah.
And then the middle of the road jokes that like,
I'm kind of familiar with
that. Yeah, I remember that. Oh, that's that Rufus guy. Oh yeah, I remember him. That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll list out the
because you
things.
Know you're going to get the Sacagawea like joke in there.
It's just a question how.
One of the best. One of the best.
Nut Sacagawea puns.
Yes, it's one of the best.
So you're starting with comedic concepts categorized on a whiteboard. Yeah. There's no rhyming pairs. I mean, I saw it for another one.
Yeah, not yet. No couplets yet. Usually, you know, we'll just kind of be like, okay, these are fun. This is good. This is good. This is good. Yeah, you should know that. And then out of that, usually some sort of rhyme will come out. Like if you say Sacagawea, someone will be like, what rhymes? That's a fun word. What rhymes with that? Usually we'll do that for a while and then break away and start writing on our own, like writing jokes together, crafting jokes together.
Do you divide up who's writing what? Or you're like, you're both working on the same thing independently?
It's gotten really, really varied. Like your guys' verse, like in past songs, like in the Ninja Turtles, like Pete wrote the first part of the artists, and then I wrote like the middle part, and then he wrote the back end, and then I wrote the front end of Ninja Turtles, and he wrote the front end, and then the other guys are like punching in jokes and punching up jokes, and like anybody in the room could be saying something. Dante will say something, or you know.
And how many people are in that process at that point when you're in the room?
Four or five. Yeah, okay. Usually four or five, and then usually it comes down to me and Pete one night late, like just punching
it out
and getting it done. Yeah.
But okay. I'm really going to dig into the when you go into the room by yourself because, I mean, it's fascinating for us because we also do this, you know. And first of all, we're not going to both go into a room and write the same verse because then that's double work.
Yeah.
We're going to divide this thing up.
Yeah.
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 So you're a little crazy there. I mean, Rhett and I don't want to create any more work. If he's going to write something, I'm for sure not going to also write it.
Right.
And risk it not being used.
Well, we don't do it that way. Like we'll divide it up, especially if I'm playing a character and Pete's playing a character. We'll spend a lot of time writing each our own character.
Right.
But Pete does a lot more of the mixing and a lot more of the like costuming and stuff than I do. So I at times I'll need to carry a little bit more weight on the writing and just the writing side.
Okay.
And then it always changes once you go into the studio to record it anyway. So when I used to write back in the day, when we used to butt heads a lot more with everybody, I used to like write these jokes and really fall in love with them and really have them be precious and to be like, it would be like a big argument when we were trying to change them. And now I write things and I think about 85% of it will stay. Like once it gets, at first, like as it gets down farther and farther, as it closer. But like we've changed the entire back ends of the song in the studio on the mic in the headphones just because it wasn't feeling right for some reason, or just wasn't going right.
But when you're like in there writing your piece, like you wrote the beginning of Lewis and Clark. You can't be starting with Lewis.
You can't
and
be
Clark.
Starting with Lewis and Clark. Yeah.
Yeah, keep going. They cut a path and we see, like, I'm walking.
That used
park.
To be we blaze a trail, and it used to be blaze a trails, but then we used blaze a trail later on in the song. We're like, oh, we gotta change the front one. I was like,
You
can't blaze twice.
So they cut a path through MC's like a walk in the park.
That almost works better now.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to know, because you're sitting there, you've got jokes. That's how we start too. We have jokes. We used to fall in love with like that sounds good, and then no one cared if it wasn't funny. But the thing that you guys, I'm always in awe of you guys, is how amazing the flows are. I mean, there's the level of artistry. It's so difficult to bake comedy into something that sounds so legitimate. Wow. I mean, it's not comedy music. You're making
usually
rap
you have
music.
To make usually you have to make a compromise.
Yeah.
In one direction or the other.
And so how does that work? I mean, there's this. I know because I've had to learn it. I've actually tried to do it a lot.
Right.
And that's create something that has an amazing flow that I would actually sound like an actual rapper. I want to see that comment.
Yeah.
Because those were my heroes as a kid, rappers.
Yeah.
So I just want one comment and thousands to say, well, that was actually a good flow.
That was good flow.
But you obviously give a lot. You devote a lot of effort to that because it it shows. But how do you do that? I mean, you're sitting there saying...
Well, I started rapping as an escape from comedy. So I never considered I never wanted to do comedy rap. And I consider the rap battles comedy, but no more comedy than any other rap battle is. It's just more understandable and digestible because everybody understands the context. So I don't really consider myself a comedy rapper. If you look at any of the original music that I do, it's all hip hop and none of it's really funny. So I do write it just like a regular rap song. And then, you know, in coming up with the flows, I think that's the kind of the art of being an MC and being, you know, it's like skiing or slaloming or something or surfing or figuring out how you want to, like, the beat is that double dutch, you know, mm-hmm. and then you just got to figure out what your woo-wop is once you get inside of there. And then, that's why the beat is so important. And it's tough to write the track without the beat first, because that can start to sound really, really, really like repetitive after a while. So, and back in the day when we used to write, you can hear it too. We've grown as you get, but you can hear the jokes split it up. You can hear it's like set up punchline, then set up punchline.
Oh, yeah.
And now as we've evolved, you get longer verses that kind of flow and they're all blended together a little bit better.
Right. When you can get that, I mean, boy, back in the day, we would have maybe three setup lines for one punchline, you know, like, mm-hmm. and you just hear it. It's just like throwaway. It's like, to get there.
But it's interesting that I hear you saying that you're not even doing setup punchline anymore, really. I mean, there's some of those in there, but that's not really the approach at all.
Everything's a joke.
It's
purposeful.
Conceptual.
Everything's purposeful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's punchline. That's how we do it.
Well, an interesting thing is I don't, you may have forgotten this, but I remember the first time Pete sent us the Super Mario Brothers and Wright Brothers, and we were the Wright Brothers.
Yeah.
And he sent us the lyrics, and he sent us the lyrics, and he was like, you know, he kind of had a little bit of a, you know, let me know if you have any thoughts or kind of thing. And so we were just kind of assuming that this is probably like a lot of the collaborative videos that we had done in the past. We kind of wanted to like do our due diligence to kind of make it our own and that kind of thing. So I didn't know what he meant by give us any notes. And so we like kind of came back with, we think we should probably say this here, or this here, having no insight really into like the machine that had. And it was a little bit less of a developed machine at that time.
Sure.
But I can't remember his response word for word, but it was basically, no, we're not going to do that. And now hearing this conversation, of course, and we would never in a million years would we have done that on the second or the third, because it's gone through this process and it's gotten to be exactly what you guys want to do. But it was more, we were kind of approaching it from that, oh yeah, some YouTubers collaborating together. We should probably give our thoughts on this, right, just because we're being a part of it. But now there's like this going into that process when we get that, you know, your guys' demo track.
Yeah.
I'm like, how can I make it as much like what they have presented? It's going to be me being, right.
Yeah, it's
you
like,
know,
don't change, you know,
Clark.
It's like a director that, a really good director who.
You can trust script.
You know, you're not supposed to change the script because that's how they work. I mean, that is how you guys put so much into it.
Yeah.
There's no need to, we're not going to riff on this thing. We're not going to improv our way into something better. Well, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for all those nice things. It's really cool of you guys to say. I think that's always been our goal we understand how busy most people that we work with are. So like, and I've been on the opposite side of that. When someone sends you something, you're like, I can't really work with this. And now I feel really awkward that I have to kind of go in there and do this. So our goal was always to like try to blow people away with the demo.
But when you're writing for Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, man.
At that point, you can't. I mean,
we learned a lesson
defer?
From that. We learned a big lesson from that.
Really?
And it was it was empowering, I guess. Because we wrote the lyrics, but we never sent him a demo.
And he was playing?
Moses.
Against
Santa
Claus.
Which is something,
what a bizarre.
I love that pairing.
I was scratching my head a little bit on that one, but okay.
You know, whatever. But we didn't send him a demo. We just sent him the lyrics because we're like, that's Snoop Dogg.
You sent him the instrumental.
We sent him the instrumental and the lyrics, and we sent him the Santa part. And it was just holes for what his part was.
So there are no vocals for his part.
Right. And he was joking around. I was like, these dudes are messing with me. And they didn't even send me a demo. They just make me freestyle on this thing. So we were like, we took out of that. Oh, and it was like a sort of a light bulb moment. Like, of course, like, so, like as least work as a guy that's that busy has got to be, send him that. And then if he wants to change it, of course he'll change it. But like,
He came in and that was the flow that he had come up with, or he asked for a demo later?
We never got to track with him. He just went to his own private basement studio with his guy and just send us back
and worked
the
it
song.
Out.
And so, it was still awesome.
Yeah.
But like, I think he just thought that was funny that we didn't send it to him. We were like, oh man, we didn't want to step on your toes.
But you never did. You heard this after he had come up with the flow and everything.
Yeah.
So you put Snoop to work.
Well, we did
you
make a demo. We made a demo.
But he didn't send it to him. I can totally get that. So you put Snoop to work.
Hey, man. Got to do it.
and was his better?
Oh, man. I mean,
don't answer it.
I
didn't ask
it was
that question.
So Snoop.
It was, you have to say yes.
We got
I'm
it
sure
on
it
tape.
Great.
We got it on tape that when we first, they sent it over and it was like, we downloaded this file and we're like, we're going to hear Snoop sing our stuff.
Yeah.
And we have the whole video. We're going to put it in the BTS, but I don't know. We didn't get in there for some reason, but like, it was just like us being like,
So for Lewis and Clark, you get to this point where you know that, all right, they've discovered a whole bunch of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so what are you going to do with that?
Yeah, we thought like in that, you know, that like sort of roundtable discussion I was talking about, we thought it would be cool to like for them to like to list off a bunch of stuff. And then I went online and I did like a search for, I don't know, Lewis and Clark animals. And there was like this one page that listed off all the animals that they discovered. And it was really, like, it was like a long
list. You were
list.
Like, I bet somebody's rhymes.
Like, weasel, eagle.
Yeah.
And then Beaver also rhymed with weasel and eagle, I think.
Yeah. Because it does, man. It does.
Rattles. So Zach, the guy who played Einstein, he's like the most wordsmith of us all. Like he's the best in terms of like syllables and the crafting of a word that comes together. So for that section, I sent him that link and the idea, and then he sent back like three different versions of a list, and then I took what he wrote, and I like kind of worked it into the beat, and like so it changed probably like 30% more. And so that's how that process is really nice. It's like a handing off of, you know, the ball to each other quite a bit. So it's really it's a nice collaborative process.
We want to get back to, we want to go back to the Lloyd, the pre Epic Rap Battles of History Lloyd, to figure out how you became this guy.
Okay.
And that takes us back to New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Yep. You were born there?
No. I was born in Staten Island, New York.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I was born in New York and I moved to New Hampshire when I was like three or two. And I spent like all of high school and, you know, up through high school, graduated high school from New Hampshire. And then I've moved around. Two brothers, my older brother, Kirk, and my younger brother, Travis.
So the middle brother, what's the dynamic there?
I got lost in the mix. I got to be a little bit of both because my younger brother is 8 years younger than me.
Oh, okay.
So I was the younger brother for like the first 8 years. So that was cool. I have a great relationship with both of those guys. They're great. I'm going to be an uncle soon. My little brother's having a baby girl. So I'm going to go down. He lives in Florida.
How old is the older brother than you?
Kirk is a year and a half older than me.
So was he the one who was like bringing the rap tapes in the house?
Nope.
Oh, really?
Not at all. That's not my brother, Kirk. How did I get into rap? I got into rap. My memory is not real good. And there's like different types of people, you know, and I'm not like a cataloger. Like I can't remember any words to any lyrics.
Oh, really?
Any song. I wrote a line about that. The only words to rhymes I remember are mine. And I forget those a lot too. So I was into like all kinds of music. And then I really started getting into rap probably like in college.
Oh, that, okay.
Yeah. When I started doing improv, we did one like little improv game that was like freestyle rap game. We're like, what if we freestyled rap? That would be so crazy and amazing. So we started doing that.
But it was comedy first.
It was, but then it became very quickly about like freestyling and ciphers at parties. You know what I mean? And like, and then because we would do these freestyle sessions, like other guys who were rhymers would start to hang out. So I would start hanging out with those type of guys more. And then,
so were you a performer from a younger age? Was that like something in your blood? That was a thing.
I played Bilbo Baggins in a sixth grade play.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
hairy feet and everything.
Yeah, well, it was low budget, so I didn't get any hairy feet. And maybe it was like makeup. I did get that from my older brother. Like he was in high school plays, and so then I started doing plays. Okay. I was a gymnast all throughout college and high school, so I was much more of like a jock than a
rings
kid. Yeah, rings. Yeah,
you everything. Look like. Yeah, I can everything. See you on some rings.
Pommel horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything. Really.
Yeah.
Dang. Could you? What could you do on rings right now if we had a set?
Almost nothing. I think I could probably do a handstand. That's about it.
That's not like it's not like shooting a basketball. It's not like you could be like 55 years old and you're like, yeah, I can still shoot. You like the rings is tough.
Not real. Yeah, it's tough. So you
did that from a young age. If you were like doing the gymnast thing, it's like kid indoctrination.
Yeah,
it's like it owns your life. If you're like you're trying to be an Olympian, right?
Yeah. Well, it's definitely much more like I think you practice a lot. I practice a lot more than like most sports. It's just like after school, you play for a couple hours and you go home. This was like, we would have 2-a-days in summer and it was like from 3 to like 9 every day, and Saturdays too. And then like, once you got into college, we didn't really get Christmas and it was intense. It was Division 1. So
where'd you go to school?
UMass Amherst.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
And do you... As a gymnast, do you do everything, or is it like, nah, he's the rings guy?
I was an all-arounder up until I got and once you get to college, they start to specialize you, but there is a specialized one called all-around, so guys who especially do that. That's how I ended up getting into comedy, is I blew my knees out. So I had extra time to take like the acting classes that I always wanted to take.
Was it just like a matter of deteriorating over time? Was there like an injury where it just...
Yeah, I had a pretty gnarly accident.
Tell us about it in detail.
Well, your knees are like a degenerative thing. So they're attached. Your knee is definitely the Achilles heel of the human body. So it's attached.
What's the Achilles heel?
It's
the knee.
It's the knee. But once you hurt your knee, it's easier to hurt it again. So I started, I was a wrestler. There was at one point in high school when I would wake up at 5 a.m., go do diving, then do school, then wrestle after school, and then go from wrestling practice to gymnastics practice. So in the state tournament of wrestling, this guy shot in on my knee and like hit it sideways.
Oh, gosh.
And it's called a subluxation. So it like slid out of the socket and then back in. Then I pinned his ass and couldn't move on because my knee swelled up.
But so it made you mad. Like it hurt that bad that you were like, he is not going to beat me.
He's not.
He's going to change my life trajectory.
I know.
But he's not going to win this match.
It totally happened. It's really weird. But then I hurt my knee in gymnastics once. And then in college, I was doing this trick where it's on the floor, you know what a round off is? It's like forward momentum into back. It's like a cartwheel where your legs come together. Uh-huh. So you do a round off and then it's called a whip back, which is like a really fast flip. And then you do another flip out of that. But I rolled my ankle in the whip back. So I rolled my right ankle in the whip back and then I flung over. And I remember in the midair, I was like, oh, that hurt my ankle. Thank God that wasn't my knee. I literally thought that. And then when I landed, I just landed side. My whole knee popped out. So I have 2 screws in my left knee. So I rehabbed that for a year and I was on crutches for like 7 months. And then I got back competing again. Then I blew my right knee. I tore my ACL on my right knee on parallel bars. So then after that was like,
how do you tear a knee on a parallel bar?
Dismounting. I was doing a layout with like a double twisting layout off. And so I landed and I was still spinning. And then like, you kind of turn into the ground. So. It hurt. It was just very like, demoralizing.
Yeah, because, after everything you'd been through with the recovery, and then it's the other knee. Even it's not even the same knee.
Yeah, it was tough, but that's what opened up everything for comedy.
But how low did it get at that moment? I mean, is it like?
Yeah, what were you planning on doing?
It was almost a blessing because I wasn't going to be in the Olympics. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't. The coaching wasn't good enough. I hadn't been doing it long enough. I didn't have enough. At that point whether you're going to be in the Olympics or not.
Right.
So it was almost a blessing, like, because it was taking up so much of my time and I didn't really love it. You know what I mean? It's like you almost do it out of obligation. You do it out of like a lifestyle because it's kind of what you've always done.
It's your world. I mean.
Yeah. But I didn't love it. And then I started doing this improv stuff and I could focus on that.
But what was that choice? Was that a switching tracks or were you just doing that on the side? So it was like, well.
I was doing it on the side, but when I got hurt, I had more time. You know what I mean? Because you rehab, but like your practice is like 6 hours a day. But if you're hurt, you rehab for an hour or two, but I could do plays. I could do this improv stuff at night, you know, there was like a show at 7 or something, I could do it. So I just was able to do it. I was doing these improv shows on crutches, you know. Like,
really?
That's how I met my...
Were you like incorporating the crutch into all of your like characters and bits?
Yeah, a little bit. I would. At first, until I got done.
Were you already kind of funny? Like a guy that was just like, oh, amongst my friends, I'm a funny guy. Maybe I should do improv, or I want to be funny, so I'm going to do improv.
That is a funny thing to say. I never thought about doing comedy ever in high school. I was like a talkative and charismatic guy, probably a little bit funny. But I always thought I would be like serious acting and stuff. And then I did this improv exercise in a college class and it went really well. And then we went to an improv show that night as a class. And this kid was happened to sitting next to me being like, oh, you should join this group. They just had an audition on campus. So I went and did that. And that's how I got into doing comedy.
What do you have that makes you good at improv personally?
There are two types of improvisers. There are like two categories. There's heart players and head players. And head players use their mind to protect their heart. So, and they make funny, witty, sharp jokes. They're intellectual players. And I'm very, very pure heart and character player. So I don't remember lyrics. I can't make a lot of deep references or anything, but I can react and emote and play pretty honestly. And I'm pretty physical, and I think that helps. But yeah, and definitely rap battles has helped me be a lot better at characters, which usually plays pretty good too.
I don't mean to make this about us, but I'm just trying to process, having never taken an improv class, but talk to a number of people who come from that world. I'm very fascinated with it because we do a lot of improv and we just kind of feel our way through it.
Yeah.
And even in deciding how we want to take a particular episode, we're having a conversation this morning about who should lead and who should react depending on the thing. So I'm just like, okay, who's the head and who's the heart? That's pretty, there's a blur to the line, obviously.
Yeah.
But if you have to categorize us, it's pretty obviously Rhett's more of a head guy and I'm more of a heart guy.
Yeah.
The thing about, but I'm also the guy who like remembers all the lyrics.
Right.
I think that's a totally different thing. That's a totally different part of my brain. Mm-hmm. But like, if you tell me to remember a line or like, you got to deliver this in this way, or I'm gonna zing them with this one.
Yeah.
So like, I'm gonna flop.
But if it's like a rap he learned in second grade,
right off the top. Like yeah. There.
But if it's a,
which I can't do at all.
Just I'll give you an honest reaction and like maybe it'll be funny. You know, it's kind of a, see like even when I said that voice, was that funny?
Yeah, you're definitely, well it's like this thing. I don't know, I almost wrote a book about improv one time. There's like head and heart and character and self. So
are you making this stuff up? Are these your principles that would be in your book?
Yeah, that would
really
be. Yeah.
The head and the heart, this is your thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think so. That's what I would. Well, I wrote a curriculum. I own this comedy theater and there's a training center and I wrote a curriculum there's like six levels of classes there. And that's changed a little bit since then, but I wrote the first curriculum and, you know, you have six levels of improv and you go through, it's, you know, but head and heart and character and self. So the other thing, I don't know how much improv you've seen, but like some people play themselves on stage most of the time. Like they're like a version of like a Kevin Costner or Harrison Ford, you know, like the improvisers are the same way. Like they don't change the way they improvise too much. And then there's guys like I think I'm more this way, you'd probably be this way too. It's like much more character based, like bigger
shapeshifter.
Yeah. Like a Johnny Depp or like a Tom Hardy or somebody like that who like play really goes the other way. But you can have a guy who's like a character player, which is big and out there, but he can also play from his mind, you know what I mean? Which is what I think probably you would do if you're like a fairly cerebral guy but does characters, that's what you would do.
See, I don't think I'm a mind guy at all. I think I'm a heart guy.
It's heart? Just, full of heart?
Whatever.
I'm all heart!
Or whatever's gonna come out. The more calculated it is, the more it probably isn't gonna work.
Yeah.
For me.
That's cool.
If that's what you mean.
Yeah. Maybe that's true. We'll have to get you guys in an improv class and we'll find out.
Well, yeah, we definitely talked about it. Because almost everything we do is just pure instinct and not, and it's just, if there's any sort of curriculum, it's just something that we discussed amongst ourselves.
Well, you guys have been
trying to discover.
You guys have been friends for so long.
It's, yeah.
That's so
valuable. That helps, right?
That's so valuable.
So I want to, because, you know, I don't think a lot of people may not know that you own this comedy theater. So this is a big part of who you are in your life. So,
and it really highlights that pivotal moment where you switched over. to kind of go back to that point in the story.
Yeah, so you're trying improv for the first time, and then where does that go?
I was in college. I auditioned for this improv thing on crutches. I met a guy named Aaron Krebs, who I still work with today, own the theater with today, and got into this improv group, started improvising.
And this is where?
At UMass.
Okay, UMass.
And at UMass, the first year there, I was like hanging out with all the jocks and all like the jock guys, because that's where I was. It never felt like I fit in. I just didn't get it. I didn't have, like, they would like bust each other's balls all the time and really, you know how, I don't know, there's certain people like, they could be friends with you, but they're gonna like, they're macho kind of. I didn't like that. So I ended up meeting these improv dudes and we got along really well. And I finally had this clique of friends and we started like doing these shows and doing a show every week and the audiences grew and grew and grew. And then we started touring a little bit and there was six of us guys who really clicked, six of us. And so after I got hurt in college, that it was my junior year at the end of the year, three of those six guys were going to graduate and then the group was kind of going to fall apart. So I was like, F this. So me and Aaron got drunk on a 12 pack of Corona and he was going to go to New York City and like take a job at like a bank or something for like 40 grand a year, mm-hmm. which at that time was a lot. But I was like, man, we got to get out of here. We got to get out of here. What are we doing? Let's go do this. So we're like, all right. So I dropped out of college, convinced two other guys to drop out of college. And then the other three guys who graduated, we all got in a van that summer. We packed all of our stuff into a van and we drove together to Chicago in a van, rented a big house.
You talked all the five other guys, three of which were graduating. They needed direction. The other two needed to be redirected.
Yeah.
And so you were like,
let's go.
Did you get any phone calls from angry parents?
No, everybody was super supportive. Everybody was like, I think they knew. They could tell there was something special about that thing.
What was your name? Because you had a name.
My name? Agent Snake Eyes.
Well, I've met the whole group, but you personally had a name?
Yeah. It still is Mission Improbable. Yeah.
Mission Improbable.
MI's West Side Comedy Theater. Mission Improbable's West Side Comedy Theater.
Agent Snake Eyes.
Agent Snake Eyes. You better believe it. G.I. Joe reference.
I didn't know you all had to have individual names.
Yeah.
Again, that's more of a rapper thing.
Yeah, you know? And I was, that was me, like when I was in the beginning, like now guys have names like Agent Knuckle Sandwich or Pool, like Agent like Ham and Cheese or whatever. But I was like, no, man, the show's funny enough. We should have cool names like Agent Snake Eyes or Falcon or Hurricane or Hatchet Face or something.
as long as it was a G.I. Joe reference.
Yeah, man, Agent Destro.
Until you moved into one house. One big house.
Zartan. Yeah. That's who, Agent Zartan.
Yeah, I'll be your dreadnought, sir.
Oh yeah,
and when you get to Chicago, did anybody know anything about Chicago?
No,
you just knew this was like the improv capital of.
Yeah, we had a festival at our college, and we brought a group from Chicago there to perform and do workshops. And we met a woman named Liz Allen, and she became like our guru. And so we moved there, became a started studying. We did like group meetings. We had like a Monday business meeting and then a Wednesday rehearsal and a Friday rehearsal. And then we would all take classes at IO or Second City. We just lived and breathed and did everything.
And how are you paying for this at that point?
Working, waiting tables. One guy was like a assistant to an EMT. One guy did a temp job.
And what were you doing?
I was waiting tables at restaurant, bartending. Yeah. And and then one by one we moved to Chicago. And then some of the guys peeled off, you know, they're not all with us anymore. But me and Aaron, the guys who started the thing, I saw him last night, did shows like you guys. I've known that guy longer than I haven't known him now.
And
that's how I met Pete. So after we were in Chicago.
Oh, you met Pete in Chicago.
Met him in Chicago, freestyle rapping on a porch in the house.
Yeah, Pete was like, he was just itinerant, right? He could have been anywhere from what I remember of his story.
Yeah, he was.
Reference that Air Biscuit if you want to.
Yeah, he was trying to figure things out for himself at the same time.
He was in Chicago studying comedy like a lot of guys, and I didn't even really know him at first as a musician. I didn't know he was a music guy at all.
But he was on a porch. What?
This house that we had, it was like this 1615 West Byron. It was like we would throw these giant improv parties. That's what we did when we got to the community. We're like, let's drink. So we'd throw like these keggers, 6-7 kegs. And we came from that. We kind of brought that vibe. And a lot of the guys in Chicago at that time were kind of nerdy, kind of impish improvisers. And we just brought this party element and just got everybody involved. And it was really fun. And so there was like this back hour where everybody would smoke and stuff. And we were out on the porch just in doing that freestyle thing that we had been doing since college. And, you know, it was me and my buddy Reese and Jeff and my other buddy Hobie. And then there was this other kid who could actually rap. And usually there was not a lot of guys who could rap as good as us because we had been doing it for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And Pete was there like in his own little thing. And I was like, this kid can rap. So that's how we met. Yeah.
And then, but you didn't immediately begin working together at that point.
No. Mission Improbable started touring. We would tour colleges. And then after we toured, like I toured for about 4 years. And then it gets really hard. But there's improv is great because you can do the same format because it's a different show every time. So we started hiring out like second crews, and so Pete became one of the guys we hired as a second crew. So he, you know, he, as one guy got married and had a kid or whatever, couldn't tour anymore, like we would bring other guys on. Mm-hmm. So Pete and I toured together doing the Mission Improbable show for a couple years, and that, you know, I learned he played guitar. We started, you know, making some music together, and then when I came out here, he came out about a year later, and we just stayed in touch. And then the rap battles started as a live show at the Westside Comedy Theater.
Okay, so you came out here first. Mm-hmm. And so how did the whole Chicago thing wrap up? And then what made you come to LA?
Aaron, the guy that I started with, was always very set. He's from Texas, so I guess it's closer or whatever. He knew what it was like, but he was like, I got to go to Chicago, LA. So he moved out first, and it was like this gray area. Cause we would be touring. I'd only be home like 3 months out of the year. So it's like, you never really had a place where you were staying anyway, but like he moved out there first. And then our other buddy, Jason, moved out there. And then just one by one, we started to like because we knew like improv is great, but it doesn't have, it's, you got to do something with it. You know, you got to write something or do a show. There was no internet at that time. There was no, it was either get on TV or SNL or you don't. So we were like, all right, we better go to LA. And you know, that's where what we want to do is biggest. So we never thought about doing a theater, though. That wasn't the idea. It was like write a TV show or something.
Okay. Right. You wanted to take the traditional path, which is like improv and then move into traditional entertainment.
Yep.
And then where did Josie come into this? Where did
you met Josie at a show in South Dakota. Yeah, so
South Dakota.
South Dakota. She's from Wyoming, but she went to school in South Dakota. So, yeah, she was. I wooed her with my comedy stylings.
And so that was during one of the trips. One of the
tours.
One of the tours.
Yeah, there's a picture of me. Because they're like the contacts at the schools will like hire the groups or whatever, and there'll be like student activities boards of like students who work on these crews or whatever. Uh-huh. So Josie was like the lead on that show. So there's a picture of me meeting Josie the first night. Me, Josie, Pete, and all the guys, and we're like hanging out. It's like the first night I ever met my wife.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. Yeah.
And okay, so eventually, and when was that? When did you meet her? How long has that been?
That was, geez, 2003.
Okay, and then you guys got married when?
2009. So we've been married just over 4 years. No, 2009. No,
that's 6 years, Lloyd.
No. Yeah, I know.
It keeps going, the time.
We've been married for 5 years, so.
Whenever that is.
We got engaged in 2009, I think. Oh, God. Sorry, babe.
Sounds right. She's not listening. Yeah.
We'll edit that out. We won't. Maybe we will. So Pete moves to L.A.
Uh-huh.
And you guys get back together and say, let's start this. Did it start as Epic Rap Battles of History? Was that was the first idea?
No, it was a complete accident. It was a complete accident because I never even, like, I didn't watch online videos before the rap battles. Like, my second video was Vader Hitler. So I wasn't, like into it. You know, I didn't know anything. The rap battle started inside of a live show called Check 1-2. So it was me and Zach, who I met on the road, and he was another guy that we would rap with all the time. And when he moved to LA, I was like, we should do a comedy freestyle rap show. So we made this show called Check 1-2, and it was like an hour show and have like 5 minute long segments. And, you know, it was like, hold up your stuff, and we would rap about somebody's keys or rap about whatever. We're like, what's your name? Rap about Rhett or rap about Link. And then one of the segments was a celebrity rap battle.
Okay.
And we would get two suggestions from the audience, and it would be like, okay, Barbra Streisand versus Lionel Richie. And then we would go off and put these fake necklaces on and be like, everybody knows there's a long-standing beef between Barbra Streisand and Lionel Richie. People are getting shot. No one can get out their house. We're going to bring it now to the stage. We're going to squash the beef in this rap battle. So then we would freestyle rap battle. And Pete came and saw that show.
And this is all, I mean, completely improv.
And how often does it not work?
I mean, about 50% of the time.
Really?
It failed about 50%. But you could come up with some cool stuff.
When it fails, how would you deal with that?
Well, when you're watching a show, the audience understands that it's really hard. So as long as you have charisma and you can keep going, you're fine. It's just about not being embarrassed.
You can't lose confidence and just go into yourself.
How important is it for it to rhyme which is more important? That like, oh, I said something funny, or that
it
actually rhymes?
It
has to rhyme, right?
One guy can get away with it if it's like, so me versus...
As a joke.
But one guy has to be able to put it together. So you can do it without a beat. Like if you watch rap battles online, a lot of the rap battles, they don't have beats. So you can kind of like...
Stretch it out.
You can stretch it out. It's not, mm-hmm. You don't have to be as articulate. So we would do both. But I told that, you know, I kept talking about this rap show with P because he and I used to freestyle a lot. And I told him about this segment. And he had just started with Maker because I got an email at the theater from a gentleman named Benny Fine. and I still have it saved. And he was looking for writers or comedy people for this upstart company that they were doing where they would take YouTubers and put them and help them collaborate together. And that was the station at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
Eventually became Maker, now it's Disney. So I sent Pete over there and they hired him as like a little songwriter. Pete owes almost his whole life to me.
The Fine Brothers emailed you blindly as a
theater opener, yeah.
Yeah, and then you send Pete over there.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Pete started doing YouTube and getting really into that. And then when he saw the show, he was like, I love this segment, dude. I think we should do a video of it. I think we should call it Epic Rap Battles of History. And we'll ask like the audience, you know, whatever. And I was like, all right, whatever, fine.
Sure.
I'll come over after work or whatever.
Because he had made other videos. He was making his like picture songs and he was getting going.
Yeah. Yeah, he was doing the musical comedy thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And at that time, if you got a thumbs up from Shay Carl or Kasim G, that could change your whole world, you know, and they were doing that at the station and in Maker. So he was like, I think we should do this rap battle thing. And then, so we wrote the song. We picked a beat. We wrote the song pretty quick. And then I went in.
And who was it? Which one was it?
John Lennon versus Bill O'Reilly. And then I met Dave. Dave McCary was the third and very, very most, very, not most important, but a very important part of this. Dave came up with, because I had done videos before, but I was like, oh, whatever. Usually it was like, eh, whatever. But I walked in, did the thing. It was cool. It was fun. We did this rap thing and then I left. And then like maybe a week later, they sent me this cut and I was like, whoa, that is far better than I thought it was going to be.
Uh-huh.
Like it was just...
Now, was this just the track? This was the video?
This was like a rough cut of the video.
Okay, okay.
So it had all this stuff going on, and it was like all this... It was just engaging. Right away, I knew it was something pretty cool.
And Dave had edited it.
Dave had edited the majority of it, and he came up with the logo even, you know.
And now Dave is at SNL, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's where it started. And then... Yeah, that's where I could talk about myself.
So you were like, I'm gonna come back in for another one of these. Let's keep doing this.
Yeah, I mean that was because
how big was that one? Hitler was number two.
Two, yeah.
Right. So that's the one that really took off.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one that did it. Yeah.
But it didn't take. I mean,
the first one I remember looking on Pete's channel and being like, "Whoa, the video I'm in is like the second most viewed channel on Pete's channel." It was pretty cool. It was like 400,000 or 500,000 views, which was good. But then Vader Hitler went really, really big. And then we kind of followed it up with Norris and Abe Lincoln. And that, I think the fact that we did three of them in a row that were pretty good,
mm-hmm.
they were all good, but they were, you know, it never got really corny. It never got really cheesy. The concept held. And also Maker was like on this trajectory and YouTube itself was like, it was like all at the crest of this wave right there. I don't know, it was like 2008 or 9 or whatever. Yeah. We were all kind of, and you guys too, like it was all growing really quickly. So it just got happened. And then, so by episode 8, I quit the theater or I left. I didn't, you know, I was like, hey, I got to go do this thing. And then I started working on rap battles full time.
What's your favorite personal performance? Like,
That's a good one. I'm Italian and I really enjoyed playing Al Capone.
Yeah.
I feel like it was like, I felt like I owed it to my people, you know? So I enjoyed that. And I think that people enjoyed me as that character, which really felt good to do that because it was nerve wracking.
Did he email you afterward?
Oh yeah. The Capone family emailed me. I think that I have to say Hitler to some extent because that character's been so good to us.
Did he email you?
I got an email for Hitler. I feel like, I don't know if, I mean, I feel like I can play that version of Hitler in places that you shouldn't be able to play Hitler, you know, just because of whatever that is, the sort of like Germany thing. So,
right.
I really loved Walter White. I really loved Hannibal Lecter this last time that we did. I'm really loving some of the battles that we have coming in the new six. So
I saw some pictures that excited me.
Yeah. I like the tough guy guys. I like the tough guy characters.
Right.
I guess that's always been my thing. Maybe it's the athlete in me, but I like those guys.
And one of the things that you've done is you've developed your own online presence apart from ERB with the Epic Lloyd channel.
One of the,
I don't know how many you're doing anymore, but I really enjoyed all the ones that you have done are the diss raps for hire.
Yeah.
Tell us about how that idea came about.
First of all, I apologize to everybody out there for not doing more of these. I really wish I could, and it's not that I don't want to do them. I don't know, and maybe I don't know how you guys do all the videos that you do. I just haven't had time to sit down and like punch one out or like write one out. So I came, diss raps for hire came from me. So a kid, when there used to be like your front page of YouTube or whatever, it was like that front page. And a kid just wrote me. I started putting up little raps and stuff like that. But a kid wrote me and was like, hey, my older brother has been picking on me. His name is Charles. He's got a weird Guido mustache and he never likes any of the food on his plate to touch. But he picks on me all the time. He won't leave me alone. Please write a rap destroying him. And I was, so I was like, yes, sir.
I'm all over this.
Yeah. So I came up with this idea. Like, I was like, that sounds fun. You know, it was like, and it felt like the type of thing. And then it felt like the type of thing that if you liked a rap battle, you might like this. You know, it was like a good example of like a successful sort of spinoff. I was able to drop little hints about the battle in the diss raps videos. So people would be like, oh, he wrote on the chalkboard. What's that thing?
So you ripped Charles a new one.
I did rip Charles lyrically. A new ass. Yes, I did. I lyrically did. Yeah.
So you still want to get back to doing those more often.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the main thing? I mean, there's the Epic Studios web series.
Yeah, I did I'm doing a web series called Epic Studios that's hopefully going to get produced in early 2016 in Toronto. And that's like a workplace comedy that is about a guy who inherits a studio from his dad who gets killed by a lion.
Don't say y'all.
It's so hard. So hard to cope when it happens so much. Epic Studios.
Did you write this?
I wrote it with Aaron, the guy I went to college with, and his wife, Jill.
And what's the outlet for this?
That's TBD still. It's like, it's hopefully, I think it's going to be online. But it's still in like the process of maybe getting picked up or not, but hopefully the chances are good. And
is it like you shot a pilot or?
We shot a sizzle reel. It's called like a sizzle reel. So we shot a sizzle reel for that up in Toronto, and it's through the, in Canada, you get like federal grant money to make art and stuff. So it's like this application process for that. So we're in like the second or third round of that. So hopefully we'll get picked up, which would be really cool. Yeah.
Oh.
So Epic Studios and then diss raps for hire on the Epic Lloyd channel and try to do that and just original music. And then the big news is the Rap Battles tour, which is in August. We start touring in the middle of August, right after this season gets over. And then we go on tour in the United States for a month. And then we're going over to Europe. So the UK and France and Spain and a bunch of dates over there. So I'm really, really excited for that.
Can we come?
Yes, you absolutely can come. Actually, if we do a show here in LA, we're going to ask you guys to come and perform. So
did you just ask? Because we just said yes.
Red leg, red leg.
I mean, I'm talking Spain too.
Dude.
I can swing by Spain. Yes.
Swing by.
Swing on ole. We have to
say ole. I'd love that.
Yeah.
We got to practice a little bit more than we did before we got up there for VidCon and like started our like Mario Brothers thing. Like
that's hard.
The wrong.
It's hard.
Crowd was very loud.
We had to start the song.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you and Pete, like, come on, wink or something.
we were so mad at ourselves after that. And
nobody noticed except us and Pete and you.
I was just I was mad. We were going back home. We were driving back up to LA from Anaheim and I was just mad. And I texted Pete and was just like, man, I feel so bad for not coming in at the right time.
We're the Wright brothers and we started at the wrong time.
And he was like, man, don't worry about it.
Totally screwed up Vader, Hitler at Playlist. Vader Hitler starts with a and there's like
what are you supposed to do?
It's just like you gotta be in here like two.
Click track.
Then we put that in, but the click track or the beat is like the hardest thing to hear when there's like a big audience or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like, I missed it. So like it's like the biggest nightmare ever, aside from forgetting the words, which I didn't do thank God. But like, it was just me being like, I made off Hitler. It's so bad. It was bad.
Okay, I feel a little bit better now.
Yeah.
All right, dude, this was fun. You got to sign the table. You all earned right. it.
Thank you.
And there you have it, our Ear Biscuit with Epic Lloyd. Let him know what you think. Tweet at him, TheEpicLloyd. Use hashtag Ear Biscuits. Always appreciate you guys tweeting at our guest and let him know that what you think and what you appreciate about their conversation.
As always, a privilege to talk to a guy that is doing something that is of such a high quality. And, you know, I gotta say,
it's a privilege. It's a privilege.
I've been looking at the comments on the recent rap battle featuring us. Link, we were in that. Remember that? And lots of people were saying, "I have no idea who these people are. I don't know who Lewis and Clark are, and I don't know who Bill and Ted are." And I gotta say, what that means, first of all, is that A, people don't watch great movies from the '80s. B, people don't know history. The second point. I think we have influenced because...
Well, you know, I don't have to tell you that I haven't seen Bill and Ted's
right,
Excellent
of course,
Adventure.
Of course.
And what was
you're
the
not supposed
one?
To mention that. You're supposed to just let that... You don't need to acknowledge that. You don't need to be part of the problem because you're part of the solution, which is the second point. People don't know history.
Oh, I do know who Lewis and Clark
Until
are.
Now, mm-hmm. Think about it. Millions of people out there, Link, the only thing they know about Lewis and Clark is what we have taught them as Lewis and Clark. When they think Lewis and Clark, they see me and you. How does that make you feel? That is the responsibility. We represent American heroes to kids everywhere.
Maybe this, well, if I would have known that, I'd probably been even more nervous.
Oh, really?
In the recording booth. Oh, I got to get this right. But it turned out really great, I think. Also for the Wright brothers. I mean, more people know who the Wright
yeah,
brothers
first
are.
First in Flight, more people do know. You know, they invented the airplane.
And then
in
the,
North Carolina.
The Renaissance.
They didn't invent it in North Carolina. I know they invented it in Ohio and then they flew it in North Carolina. But we don't care. We're going to take credit for it because they flew it at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina.
Yeah, so it's nice to be a part of it, of the educational thrust of hip-hop music on the internet.
Oh, really? That's one way to think about it.
All right, guys. You know what we're going to do. We're going to give you another one of these next week. So open your hearts, open your minds, open your ears for the biscuit.
All you have to do is receive it.
Just lay down right here and just put these headphones on and don't think about anything.
This is getting a little weird.
Don't think about anything. Just listen.
This is like the way you talk to somebody before you kill them.
Or just before you put them under for like dental work.
Okay. Count backwards from 10.
9, 8.
You started at 9.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3.